Hey gang, Scott with the Scott Gertner Group, and we have a good one for you today. We have Diana Jackman, the president of Magnus Title, here to answer a bevy of questions. But this came up out of two things, recent things. One of them was, I was in a real estate forum, I read about a transaction that had three agents, actually the principals in the transaction, not just the agent, but they were principals, and they got fooled by this title fraud or this identity fraud that's been a real thing for a couple of years?
Oh, many years, but very, very recently more prevalent than not. If it's a what we call absentee owner, which means someone's not living on the property, we just automatically assume that it's probably going to be a fraudster and work our way backwards.
So that's probably the biggest emphasis today. But then one of you guys always give me the best content, called and said, "What? Hey, how can I get my, I think it was her daughter, onto our title? You know, I think the intention is passing generational wealth on, and that's a good idea, or is that a good idea, or who can do that?" So both of those things, two of those things that we're going to go over today. Diana, thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Being here. You are the perfect person to answer this.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Magnus. Now, this is our title partner. And, you know, for I think most people, even most realtors, think it's just kind of fungible. Doesn't matter. Just, you know, whoever, title company. I promise you, I'm doing this. It's going to be 40 years in February. That ain't the case. So there's a number of reasons that we pick them. What are some of the reasons you think people should use you?
Well, Magnus Title has really experienced escrow staff, and I do a whole separate class. We could do a whole separate podcast on this if you want, about how important title insurance is. But escrow is separate from title, and the escrow officers have to understand the functionality of their duties in able to give the best products and services to the clients out there. And not every single title company and escrow company has the experience that we have behind us.
Yeah, you know, we really see that as it comes up into foreign purchases and things like
that.
That's
where FERPTA, don't even go there. That could be a whole nother podcast.
Honestly, FERPTA is the Foreign Investment Trade Act or something, and it gets very convoluted. We aren't doing as many as we used to. We've lost a lot of our foreign clients because the exchange rate sucks.
Yeah, they sold out a while ago. I think it was either last year or the year before, we were seeing FERPTA nonstop.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing all the FERPTA issues nonstop because people don't really understand how to handle those types of things. So CPA, I'm not one. So.
We probably should do one on what is title insurance, why do you need it, that kind of a thing. But I don't know that that's this podcast.
No, we've got so much to go over.
Yeah, we do. So talk to us about security and this new, not new thing, but what we're calling.
So one of the things that we do at Magnus Title is we train our escrow staff to listen to their gut when red flags come up. Does that mean we're always going to catch a fraudster? No, because we're not private investigators. We're escrow officers. And the function of our job duty is to take instructions from the parties we're working with. So where that goes a little sideways right now is fraudsters are doing a few different things. They are either stealing the title by way of fraudulently creating a document that transfers that property into an entity, a trust, or another person's name, and then trying to sell the property before they get caught. Then there's another thing that they're doing, which is becoming more and more prevalent, which is looking up a property that may have a lot of equity in it. It may have a mailing address for the tax bill that goes out of state or out of country. That's the perfect property for our fraudsters. And vacant land is a big one right now. And then they just create a fake ID, come right in and sit down in front of us and sign away the property and take the money and run. So we've even had ones where there was FERPTA. Well, they don't care if they have to pay FERPTA because they're going to get the rest of the money.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting and challenging right now with all of the fraud that's going on for escrow officers because, you know, we have one function, and that is to protect the documents and the funds that are placed within our company in a neutral place so that the parties don't have to worry about fighting each other for it later. So now we're coming up against, we have to be private investigators. Like, what's going on here? This guy, I Googled him and he died in 1963. This guy looks like he's 45. Like, what? You know, so it's, we try to catch what we can, but I'm telling you, every title company out there is up against this right now. So you better be working with a title company that trains their employees on how to see the red flags that may prevent it. We just today had someone trying to do that in our operation, and our amazing accounting staff caught it. So we've got all the way down from assistants to escrow officers to the accounting department, last step before it goes out the door and never comes back to us, where people are watching to see something's not right here. Let's see what's going on. And the best way we can prevent this is by trusting our gut. There are some preventative measures that we can do for these kind of thwart these fraudsters from the beginning. That typically is just staying the course, making sure you're following all of your policies and procedures. And when someone's pressuring you, they want to close quickly, you've never met them, the listing agent has never met them, they found the property on Zillow and now they want this guy to represent. So it's just, there's a lot of ways for us to prevent these things from happening, but it's still not always going to happen. And it can ruin the lives of, you know, these poor buyers that just find a property they want to buy and go for it. So it can be devastating to a family.
Oh, I get it. And you know, if you guys think this is not going to happen, it doesn't happen very often. Well, first off, our farm, the people we work with most of the time are perfect for this. Everybody has a lot of equity. Most of them are all equity. They mm-hmm. own it all. Yeah. And many of them have out-of-state residences.
Yes.
Another one we work with a lot is because it's an older clientele. We do a lot of estate work. Mm-hmm. I've never met the kids in most instances, things like that. But just give us a feel. There's probably no garden variety, but as an example today, what was the one that happened today? What were they doing?
That was exactly what they did. They identified a property that was free and clear, and they got a fake ID. Came in, signed all their papers. It was a quick close. They found a cash buyer, and they just tried to take the funds. Now, when our accounting department caught the wire and said, "This something's not right here," so now they're trying to call us to come and get a check. And so now I have a criminal contacting my employees to try and do something, and they're like, oh, you know, so it puts us in a really awkward position. But you know, the first thing you do is you stop the deal and you make sure that everybody's money stays safe, everything else stays safe. And we do have a compliance officer that then contacts the FBI. They send the wire instructions in, that account gets shut down. Or if the funds make it to the account, the funds get held as quickly as possible. And we just kind of keep going throughout. If it gets to the end where you actually record, then there's a lot more stuff that has to go on. But luckily, knock on wood, we've had one of those this year, and the funds are held. We're just waiting for them to come back right now. But the FBI and our policies and procedures were able to stop those funds from getting in the hands of the fraudster. So, but it's just happening so often. It's not, it's an industry problem. I'm part of the Arizona State Escrow Association as well as our Land Title Association here in Arizona. And that's all they're talking about right now.
Those fraudsters. It's that common.
Yeah, it's that common. It's an industry issue. They're just attacking us left and right. And with our amazing technology, which is why we're bringing this podcast to you right now, is how they can do these things. You know, they can creep into an agent's email or typically it's not going to be the title company. It will typically be an agent who, you know, we've all been there. Their address is like John Smith 1986, and that's the last time he changed his password. And so we just have to educate everyone, you know, making sure that they're changing their passwords on a consistent basis and making sure they're doing everything they can to protect themselves from becoming you know, the vehicle to be able to grab information about the transaction. So
make sure your realtor is up on this.
Exactly.
And so I'm sure everybody out there, okay, so you're saying pick the right title company. That makes sense. But mm-hmm. what about what can I do as the consumer? Do you have any thoughts about, for instance, protecting their deed? Most of them actually have the deed.
Well, let's start first with how can the buyer protect themselves? Because they were going after the buyer's funds a lot. This year we see them more going after seller's funds because they got wise to, you know, we're educating everyone out there. The buyers were getting too smart, so they changed the script. And now they're starting to go after payoffs. So they'll send fake payoffs in. You'll get a payoff. You'll get a revised payoff at the title company, and it's a new account number, same routing number, but the owner of the account is like Jose Jones or something like that. So the escrow officer has to be very, very diligent in watching for all of those things to make sure that by the time the money's going out, it's going to the right person. We did have an instance where we had a buyer go to a bank to wire their funds, and this is his banker all the time. So he was wiring his funds for his purchase, and she knew him, and he comes in and he likes her, his favorite teller, and she goes, you know, this is weird because we sent your earnest money somewhere else. Can we call the title company? And she saved him.
She saved him. That was last minute.
Yeah. And so when they called and asked, and we said no, but it says right on our email signature lines, it says right on the wire instructions, call before you wire. And so as a consumer, just making a simple phone call could save you your entire life savings, because that can be completely devastating. So they need to participate in protecting themselves. You know, I know we have the requirement in this industry to protect our consumers, and we do that by way of education, but we can only tell you, if you don't listen to us, then we don't know what else to do. So they've now kind of switched up to the sellers and kind of moving on from there, because they're like, okay, buyers are getting smart, everybody's talked about it, so now we're gonna do these other things.
You know, and that's really common sense. Is as you send it, make a phone call, and there isn't anything to worry about. Nothing that you don't have to be terrified. Just make the phone call and make sure.
Exactly.
And that's gonna cut most of it out.
And making sure you call the known source. Don't call the phone number on the wire instructions. Contact your agent that you know, and if you can't figure out who your known source is, the agent will help you with that, but you shouldn't be contacting them from the phone number that's on the wire instructions, because it could be the fraudulent wire instructions.
It will be the fraudulent.
Yes, exactly. And that's actually what happened today.
Is it?
The buyer said they called the number on the wire instructions, and a gentleman named Vincent, we don't have anyone in our company named Vincent, confirmed the wire instructions. And so it was just a happenstance that it was caught. So
you blew Vincent's day.
Yeah, we really did. Poor Vincent. He's got to go get a job.
Vince.
Go get a job, Vincent. We're not giving you any money. Yeah, so. But one of the other things, since you were talking about trust earlier, that is pretty prevalent when it comes to fraud. Unfortunately, when we look at our senior community and they're trying to, you know, estate plan for their children, they could have multiple children, and there's typically one in almost every bunch that is up to no good. Still, the number one person that's committing fraud against elders is a family member.
Wow.
So it's interesting why everybody always gives the title company, the escrow company, a hard time about verifying information and who's supposed to be the one in charge, and oh, how did you get this power of attorney and things like that. We do that for a reason, and it's to make sure we are getting those funds to the correct person, and that the person that they're representing, number one, knows that they're being represented, and number two, has done so at their own free will. So it's hard. It puts us in a very interesting position right now. So for me, if someone's simply doing estate planning, obviously they should contact their estate planning attorney or CPA, but we're seeing a lot of beneficiary deeds out there wherein once the family member passes away, it automatically goes to whomever they've identified on that beneficiary deed, so there's no questions about it. They could put it in a family trust, and within that trust, there should be identifications as to who will be the successor trustee once the trustee passes. And who all the beneficiaries are, so that there's no question. Simply when the trustee passes, then the successor trustee automatically takes over. If it's multiple siblings and that trust was put into place many, many years ago, and that one sibling that was identified does not want to act as the trustee, they can simply write a letter saying, I do not have the ability or the desire or whatever they want to say to act as trustee, and I'm going to pass it to the next. So there's typically multiple trustees within, successor trustees within that trust. There is very rarely an opportunity for one of the successor trustees or beneficiaries to use a power of attorney when it comes to a trust, because the trust itself does not allow for it. But very, very rarely, if someone is using an attorney that's very skilled and understanding that may be a situation that the trustee would like to utilize, then it has to be a part of that trust. So if anyone other than that trustee is going to be signing on behalf of that trustee, we would need to, at the title company, we would need to get the whole trust, which can sometimes feel very invasive to some of the family members. But that would be the only time. If the trustee is still acting as the trustee that originally was the trustee, then the title company really only needs an affidavit saying, yes, I'm still the one, and that's it. We just move on with the trust certificate. We don't need the full trust. Only need the full trust if something, you know, something's going on in which we would need to read that.
Honestly, it comes up with us a lot. It's been so long since they did it, and now, for one reason,
they can't find it.
But that too, yeah. And now they're not comfortable doing the documents, even signing them. Am I signing the right things? Or logistically, even DocuSign, which is pretty simple, some people struggle with because it's a computer. So the kids want to be involved, and so this actually comes up a bit.
Yeah. And it's not a lot of people understand the rules and regulations in this state really protect elderly in our state. And so we have to be really careful on the title and escrow side, because if we were to find that anyone was trying to do something that would harm this elderly person, we have an obligation to report that to regulatory agencies and, you know, the police or whomever, depending on the situation. And if we don't, we could be a party to that fraud, the act of fraud. So in everyone's title, so there's a fraud clause with it. So whether that be a standard owner's policy, an extended owner's policy, all sorts of types of policies that can be issued, but every single policy out there has a fraud clause within where it will protect someone against someone, you know, if a buyer bought a property and there was fraudulent activity happening and it ended up they couldn't get the property, or if there was a failure of title, like that instance I was telling you about where we would wire something out and then find out, oh my gosh, it's fraud, we capture the funds, and then we file a claim against their owner's policy so we could get their money back. So if for some reason we weren't able to grab those funds, then we could get the money back through the title policy. So that's really one of the biggest reasons why buyers should be getting title insurance.
Yeah, that's a good one right there. That's enough.
Yeah.
But I think this lady's direct question was, could you just put her daughter's name on the deed? Or is it much better to go to an attorney?
Well, you always want to start with your CPA, your advisor that's going to advise you the best way to do that for you, because there's tax implications to these things. So if you were to just transfer the property to a son or a daughter, it may have a tax implication. So you want to be really careful, especially if you're an agent, in advising people to do these things with their title, because we're talking about probably the biggest investment that anyone will make in their lives, and it has a financial implication to it. So you always want to be checking with your CPA. If you happen to have an estate planner, I would take it one step further and go there to say, hey, this is my situation. I'm, 75 years old, I have one daughter, I'm just going to add her to this deed as a joint tenant with right of survivorship and call it a day. Is that my best thing to do? Will I have any tax implications? That's one way to do it. Another way to do it would be a beneficiary's deed. Another way to do it would be creating a trust. So it really all depends on that one individual's estate, current tax situation. Usually when you lean towards the more robust estate, you're going to be looking more at like a trust. When you're looking at an estate that might be a small estate, maybe doing the other things would be great, but I would always want them to speak with their CPA before they do anything with their property. And then you also want to advise them to talk to their title company, because a lot of people don't know that if you change your title standing, it could invalidate your title insurance.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. And we want our title insurance. It was paid for typically by the seller. And so for us to do something just because we weren't aware and invalidate that insurance policy for ourselves would be, upsetting, obviously, to say the least. So you always want to double check when you're doing something with your property. You want to check with your title insurer, and you want to check with your estate planner or your CPA, just to make sure you're not causing yourselves a tax implication or you're invalidating that title insurance that's already in place for you.
Those are great answers. And one of the reasons when people get upset with me when I say, they would say, well, you do this every day. And I do. I said, but that is way above my pay grade. If it gets to do with an accountant or a lawyer, because we are not lawyers, but it's particularly accountancy. I'm not an accountant.
Yeah. That's the same thing with FERPTA. I know, and I don't even go back there, but we are escrow and we're title. So we're experts on title and we're experts on escrow, but I'm not an expert on taxes. I'm not going to do your taxes at the end of the year, and I don't want to do your FERPTA either. But we also do it so much more often than your typical buyer or seller.
Yeah.
That obviously we can say what we've seen in the past and in our experience this. But for the most part, it's always best for them to start with their CPA when they're working with anything that involves their property, which is, in a sense, their money. Biggest investment of their lives.
So two big takeaways there that I hear are, one, if they're being a pain in the butt on your identification and everything else, honestly, they are protecting you. Really, really. They've got to do it. It's in your best interest. And two, talk to somebody, actually go through the steps before you make a decision and make a change like that.
Absolutely. It's very frustrating because we have a lot of times where loan officers will say, oh, well, we can't close in your trust, so put it in your individual name and then put it in your trust. Or we can't close in your entity, so do this and put it in your entity. Depending on the title insurance, again, they could just be advising them to invalidate their title insurance. Not only that, but the loan officer is like, they're the sales guy, right? They're like, let's get this loan done. I'm your, connection to
I got
to
get
things.
This closed to get
yeah,
paid.
I gotta
let's
get
paid. This closed.
But also within every note and deed of trust, there is a due on sale clause. And if that lender would consider that a sale. Now, when we're talking about trusts, typically they look at that as estate planning. As long as the trustee is the same as the original owner and the beneficiaries aren't, it's nothing weird going on in that trust. It's safe to assume that's an estate planning thing. So most title insurance companies will allow that under the homeowner's policy, but under a standard policy, it could be an issue. So we have to be checking to make sure that they're not buying title insurance. The seller's buying the buyer title insurance, and the next day we're just like, okay, you're done. You don't have title insurance anymore. So we have to be really careful about what we're advising people to do when it comes to their biggest investment of their life.
Love that.
Yeah.
I think we covered
we
those.
Do that a lot.
Yeah.
We've done
oh,
it.
We do that all the time. Yeah.
Just change it after.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. You know,
it's just
for us.
Yeah. And you, that's the problem, is they don't understand what they're asking the client to do. And I think it's funny because it's typically the loan officer, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, your company is asking me to title insure them in this position, and you're advising your client to just go behind their back and do this after close. There's some instances where it's okay, and there's sometimes where you can go to the funding lender and ask them if it's okay for
up
them
front,
to do that
in
up
advance.
Front, get their written permission so that we're not accidentally calling our client's loan due and invalidating their title insurance.
Yeah, at a minimum.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we covered a lot there, but I think a lot of people looked, somebody will protect me. You know, there's all the government. Will the government protect them? Is there any help out there?
Well, a big thing that's going on in our industry right now is there are companies that are crawling out of the woodwork that are saying, hey, pay me X amount of dollars and I will watch your title for you or give you insurance that if someone steals your title, we're going to help you with this. There really is no one that can help prevent fraud. I always say to people when this happens, like, are you going to ask me whose fault it is when you get held up in an alley? I don't understand why. You need to not walk in a dark alley and you need to protect yourself. But at the end of the day, a lot of counties in our state have been adopting a policy wherein they will alert you if someone is changing the address for the taxes, because that's typically how the fraudster starts. They will contact the treasurer's office, which anyone can do. If I knew your home address, I could change your tax bill to my mailing address, because who cares if someone else wants to pay my tax bill? Go ahead. Yeah. And by the way, we typically pay our tax bills either online or through our lender. So nobody really pays attention to that part. So then when the title company is doing the search, not only are they seeing on the fraudulent deed, this is where the deed should be mailed to and the tax bill should be mailed to, but now the tax bill matches. So they're trying to reduce our red flags. So the county and our industry leaders have come together and said, Maricopa County, come on, let's get this going. And they listened, and they have recently adopted a change in which if someone changes your mailing address for your taxes, they will mail to the last known address in a notice that says someone has changed the mailing address on your tax bill. If you didn't do this, please contact us. And so that would be a number one thing there. But these companies that want to charge you money to protect you or give you insurance, there's really no assurances or insurances that can prevent someone from stealing your property. It's just how fast can you catch it? You can watch it yourself. You can contact your title company to see if they see anything weird. But at the end of the day, you can go right onto Maricopa Recorder's office and check and see what the last recorded document was for your parcel number. And it'll pop right up. And if it's not you, I would say contact an attorney immediately. And typically going through quiet title costs about 1% of the value of the home. So it's not horrible to get it back in your name if you can prove that a fraudster has stolen that, which is pretty easy to do. So it's not as detrimental as people think. But what happens is when people have a second home or something here, and they live in Canada 6 months out of the year and they come here and someone's living in their house, that's typically the problem.
Yeah.
So we can just sort of keep an eye on it. You individually as the homeowner can keep an eye on it yourself. I've trained several agents, friends, a lot of people where to go online and just check and make sure that it's still in your name. The other thing is knowing the properties that they're identifying, which is very low or no loans on the property. You could go out and get a line of credit. Again, talk to your tax advisor first. But you could go out and get a line of credit on the home and an open-ended line of credit for whatever, where you're not paying anything except for the cost to take the loan out, which would protect the equity in that home. So if it goes to sell, they're going to have to contact a lender. They're going to have to contact this person, that person. It's a little bit harder to deal with, and they might just move along to the next that doesn't have any liens on it. But there's really, you know, no way to protect yourself from crime. I mean, that's the age we're living in right now. Just be aware and protect yourself.
Well, that's good. But I think you're saying, though, that I've seen that insurance, and they make some pretty scary scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's how they sell. Mm-hmm. It's probably not your best investment.
You know, you just have to look at it and again talk to an advisor about it. Make sure you're contacting your title company, because there's a lot of companies out there that are scam artists and try and make you believe that you can pay X and you'll be completely protected. That's not true. But there are a lot of valid companies popping up to help people watch this that don't have the time to do it and want to protect their assets. Then in that instance, it's perfectly fine to have that as an added layer of protection, but nothing where they steal it and then it's just like, okay, I have this and magically it's back in my name. So there's nothing, no product out there that's going to do that. There's always going to be something that has to be done to get that back in your name.
That's good.
Yeah.
And if you guys have problems finding the assessor's office, give us a call. We'll show you how to do it.
Yep.
Diana, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We may have saved some people some real headaches.
I hope so. It's all about educating yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.